Hello, everybody. Cal Banyan here with another episode of Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. with Celeste Hackett. An informative, interesting, and at times fun show about hypnosis, where we'll talk about all kinds of stuff hypnosis related. By the way, I want you to visit calbanyan.com, especially if you're viewing this anywhere except on calbanyan.com. For example, we're listed in iTunes. That way, you'll be able to get to the notes associated with this program and any links that we put down there below this image. All right, Celeste, what's going on with you and what have you got for me today?
Well, hello, everyone. Yes, I'm also here, and I'm the fun part, by the way. Ha-ha. Just kidding, Cal. Hypnosis versus psychology as a career path. A hypnotist, possibly-to-be, wrote in wondering, you know, what would make her more, which way should she go? She wants to know what you can do with hypnosis as opposed to what you can do with psychology. She's trying to figure out what kind of a career path she wants. And then, should you direct your client to more events during a regression if they only come up with one or two things? And we're also going to talk about how to help clients to attract healthy, meaningful relationships when dating. And then Cal has something really special for you, how to make yourself look dumb or smart as a hypnotist. Actually, I think he's calling it dumb hypnotist tricks.
You think we're going to get through all that in 20 minutes?
Okay, then just the first one, hypnosis versus psychology as a career path. And you know I'm ambitious, Cal.
You are? Well, that's good. Everybody should be ambitious. All right, let's see here. So give me the question the way it was brought up to you.
Well, it goes like this. I am considering becoming a hypnotist, hypnotherapist. Can you tell me, is it possible to say what types of issues or problems that are best helped with hypnosis as opposed to counseling or therapy? For example, I could imagine hypnosis is pretty good for stopping bad habits like smoking, fingernail biting, being disorganized, but maybe not too good for things that have a deep psychological root like negative self-image, personality disorders, depression, etc.
Beautiful. Where did you get that question from?
I don't know. You know, I'm all over the place coming up with questions, and I don't remember where I got that one from.
Okay. Prioritize the Ask Cal group on our Hypnospace, okay? Because we've been telling people to go there, so we want to make sure that if they post a question there, that we'll get to them, all right?
Okay, I usually do check it. I didn't check it right before this show, but there wasn't anything new that I saw the last time I checked, which I think was Friday? Oh, I'm sorry, a couple days ago.
Okay, well, good. So I know I'm hearing a lot of stuff in this question. I could probably really talk about it for a couple hours, but one of the things I heard is, what is hypnosis good for compared to talk therapy? And I'm also hearing, what is the right career path for me? Have I got that right, Celeste?
That's correct.
Okay. So let's say you're considering, gee, should I become a hypnotist, a hypnotherapist, or should I become a psychologist? Well, gosh, you know, you don't have to be one or the other. You could be both if you wanted to. In fact, if you have a strong calling to be a psychologist, then for all means, go for it. I'm very much in favor of education. If you want a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD, you know, you can for sure go ahead and do that. One of the nice things, though, is you can start doing hypnotherapy or helping people with hypnosis a lot sooner than it takes to get one of those degrees. Now, I come from a background in psychology and basically left that profession in favor of hypnosis because it's a lot more satisfying for me and and exciting for me. It probably depends on your particular school of thought, but if you studied clinical hypnosis and wanted to get a license in if you wanted to get a degree, a PhD in clinical psychology, that's really a degree in working with people who need to be in the clinical environment. And what does that mean? People who are mentally ill. And I found that very dissatisfying after a while, because mainly as a psychologist that's working with people who are mentally ill, you're mainly doing diagnostic work and assessment work and reports and trying to manage their behaviors, particularly the behavior of taking medications. And gosh, it's not all that satisfying. And if you are working with normal everyday people with normal everyday problems, you're not going to be able to diagnose them. I mean, if it's a normal everyday problem, then they're not mentally ill. And diagnosis indicates that there's something wrong with the person. So you're not going to be able to get third-party payment and stuff like that for healthy people who just want to improve their lives. So really, there are a lot of psychologists out there working with normal everyday people, but there's kind of pressure to make diagnoses when perhaps it isn't completely appropriate. So let's look at it this way also. If you decide to be a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, and you're going to work with mentally ill people, depending on the statistics and how you define mentally ill, really only a small percentage of the population is mentally ill. So let's just round off the numbers and say 10% is mentally ill. The other 90% are normal everyday people with normal everyday problems. From a personal fulfillment point of view, professionally, being able to help people, and also from a monetary point of view, I would much rather have the 90% of the population as my potential customer or client base than I would 10%. Plus, the people who are mentally ill, usually they don't have a job and they don't have income, and you're really at the will of the insurance company and other people who might pay for services. But when you work with normal everyday people with normal everyday problems, these people typically have jobs and credit cards and things like that. And so it's a much more prosperous area, in my opinion, having been in both fields, than in clinical psychology. So what should you do? Depends what you want to be. You know, if it's very, very important to you to get a PhD or an MA or a BA, BS, you know, go for it. But you don't have to wait 4 years before you can start helping people if you want to get the bachelor's degree, or 6 years if you want to get the master's degree, or 7 or 8 years if you want to get the PhD. If what you really want to do is start, become involved in a profession where you can start making a very nice income and have the satisfaction for helping people right away, then get your hypnosis training from someone who's qualified to give you a really excellent hypnosis training, and then begin doing it while you're working for your PhD or MA. Now let me tell you something. Most college students don't have a way to make $100 an hour, okay? But if you're a hypnotist, if you're properly trained, you could make $100 an hour or more seeing clients. There's lots of people out there in college who are working many, many hours a week just to make a few hundred dollars. Where if you get your hypnosis training first and then decide to go get those degrees, you'll have a very nice way to make a very nice income as a student. How's that, Celeste? Anything else I miss or anything like that?
Excellent answer from somebody who really has been there and knows. That's what I think. Hey, Cal, you know, I've just logged on to Ask Cal. And do you think we should throw a little curveball and just drop the whole thing we were going to do and ask one of these questions on here just for fun? That keeps people on their toes, you know.
Yeah, you know what? I want to be surprised every day.
Me too. Okay, I'm just going to read this guy's question to you. And remember, you can go to Ask Cal. It's askcal.rhypnospace.com and put your question up there, and then you'll get it answered on our show, and we'll even wave to you and say hi. Hi to Steve R., who wrote this question, and I'm just going to read it right off. He says, hi there. How would you handle working with a client who wants to be motivated to something that you personally are very, very leery of? Not necessarily meaning that you think it's immoral or unethical, just not wise. For example, if you're working with a client who turns out wants to get up the nerve to quit his job and pump his life savings into a real estate scheme promoted by one of the many real estate gurus out there, I believe that personal viewpoints should be kept out of working with clients. But what if you do, from your understanding of it, believe that this scheme would lead to a bad outcome? Then what do you do? do? And he does have a few more paragraphs here, but I do think that's the gist of his question. Would you like me to continue or stop there?
Well, let me see. I'm going to make a stab at that, and then if you think you need to ask the rest of the question, that'd be fine. All right, guess what? I think that you've got to make a personal decision there. What's the name of this fellow that asked the question?
Steve R.
Oh, Steve, yes. Hi, Steve. Met you at the convention, and you're quite busy participating in our hypnospace. I really appreciate that. So, Steve, if it doesn't feel right, then don't do it. You know, I say, you know what? I'm not comfortable with suggesting that to you, and then tell them why. But on the other hand, we want to help our clients fulfill what they want to fulfill. Like, we're not, if it was me, I would say, if you got the money, honey, I got the time. In other words, if this is something you want to do, then I'm going to help you do it. And I would do the work with them. But if you don't feel comfortable doing that, then I wouldn't do it. So you need to follow your own instincts on that. My instincts on that particular question, as I understand it, is I would help them to do it. Because a lot of times when our clients come to us with a particular problem, it may seem insignificant, like maybe they want to work on their tennis game or golf game. The issue that they bring up is a microcosm of their macrocosm. And by that I mean this little thing that they're bringing to us is not just in that little part of their life. It resonates through their whole life. So here's a fellow. He wants to go for it. You know, he said, by golly, I want to go for it. I think this is the very best thing for me, given everything I know about my life, but I'm afraid. Well, you're going to help him overcome that fear. That's what I would work on. I would focus on removing the fear. And then when you remove the fear, then if he still wants to do it, then he can go do it. And he can do anything in a more fearless way in every area of his life. So what I would do is not so much focus on giving him suggestions to do this specific thing, but to remove the fear that's blocking him from doing this. And then he gets to choose whether he does it or not. How's that, Celeste?
I love that answer. Cal Banyan, you're a hypno genius. And I think we should, is it time? I'm so excited. Is it time to go on to dumb hypnotist tricks?
Oh yes, I think that's a good idea. Okay, Celeste doesn't know anything about this. Just before we turned on the camera, I said, Celeste, I got a new topic I want to end every one of our hypnosis, etc. shows with, and that is, well, I don't want to say stupid hypnotist tricks, but dumb hypnotist tricks, things that hypnotists do that undermine their success, okay? And so that's okay with you, Celeste?
I just hope I haven't done any of them.
Well, I don't think you have. If you went through my course, you would never do a stupid hypnotist trick. I mean, dumb hypnotist trick. All right. I had just wrote an article on my blog, calbanyan.com. I was talking to the president of the NGH on the phone the other night. I think it was Friday afternoon. And I read him that article on my blog. And he says, Cal, I like that. Will you do a more in-depth article for the December Journal of Hypnotism? I said, I sure will. And it's all about the stupid hypnotist trick, I mean dumb hypnotist trick, of saying, I'm a healer. Come see me, I'm a healer. And I say, smart hypnotists don't call themselves healers. What do you think about that, Celeste?
Well, if people go to our hypnospace, they'll see that you've written some really good points on this, and they would be already privy. So if you forget some of this stuff or you want some bullet points, my secret is go there and read about it. Cal's just blogged about it on our hypnospace.com. Ooh, did I give that away?
Actually, the version that I put on our hypnospace is even better than the one I did on calbanyan.com. So let me tell you what I think. I think that if you go around shouting to the world that you are a healer, that you make it difficult for everyone in this profession to practice, and you give the powers at be that would love to put you out of business just the kind of ammunition they need. Because hypnosis doesn't heal anything What do you think of that, Celeste?
Absolutely true. Continue.
When I put this up on my blog, I got all kinds of emails to me, comments on the blog about, well, what about hypnosis and pain management? What about hypnosis and overcoming asthma and things like that? Well, the smart hypnotist says hypnosis doesn't heal anything. And if you do anything other than that, you're doing a dumb hypnotist trick, because the only real healing power in the universe is your own body's innate ability to heal, given the right circumstances, if it's not overstressed and so on. The other one is the power of your own creator to heal you. So I don't want to make this too long. I got to check my clock here. I only got like a few more minutes. What we do is we remove blockages to healing. What we want to think about is in terms of by removing stress, by helping people to behave in a way that's healthier for them, like taking their medications, sleeping well at night, and things like that, that we can be complementary to what medical professionals are doing. But the smart hypnotist says hypnosis doesn't heal anything. Good. What do you think of that, Celeste?
Well, I just can't wait to see the rest of this in the December issue of the NGH Journal of Hypnotism coming up.
That's right. Once in a while, I write something that's pretty provocative, and the editor has to write me and tell me about it, but he doesn't mind. I mean, I've been writing for them for years and years now, and he doesn't mind. He says, at least we know that people are reading the journal. By the way, the NGH Journal of Hypnotism, I held it up last episode. It's the place to go to get lots and lots of good information from professionals in the profession. I want to just read off three things I wrote that I think that you should think about when you hold your services out and you hold yourself up. Number one, this is what you tell people. Instead of saying, I'm a healer, okay? You say, I am a hypnosis professional, a hypnotist or counseling hypnotist. I'm reading from my computer screen down here. That's why you see me looking down. I work with everyday people who want help with breaking habits, improving motivation, and increasing personal performance, and so on. Number two, I do have skills that people with health issues can benefit from. For example, reducing stress, improving sleep, and so on. I work with medical issues when I can partner with a medical professional who's licensed to diagnose illness and recommend hypnosis to their patients. And number three, I am not a healer. There are only two sources of healing: your body's own innate ability to heal and the ability of your creator to heal you. Okay, that's it. I got my first dumb hypnotist trick out there. I'd like to spend a few minutes on each one of the upcoming broadcasts or podcasts or netcasts or webcasts, whatever this is, covering common mistakes that hypnotists make that make their sessions more difficult or make it more difficult to practice our profession. All right, you want to wrap it up, Celeste?
Yeah, that's it for me and Cal Bannon. Here, by the way, is the copy of the latest National Guild of Hypnotists magazine that Cal was talking about. If you are a member of the National Guild, you get to have this magazine for free. It'll come right to your doorstep, and there's a lot of good stuff in here that you don't want to miss. I'm Celeste Hackett in Dallas, Texas. My business is Family First Hypnosis. Please visit me on the web at familyfirsthypnosis.com. That's it for Cal Bannon's Hypnosis, Etc. See you next time.
And this is Cal Bannon signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Bannon and Cal Bannon's Bannon Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.